How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is Monday night, March 15th. Actually, Tuesday morning, March 15th, 2011, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Plenty of stuff to talk about today, and we'll kick it off with last night's Raw, hit-and-miss show. There's some good stuff on the show. The Jerry Lawler, Jim Ross, Michael Cole deal was pretty damn great. I thought the Miz beating at the end of the show went on way too long. And overall, some good, some bad, and three more weeks left.
Yeah. I mean, I thought as far as hyping WrestleMania, it was real, real good. There wasn't a perfect show. I mean, when you have great Kali wrestling, even for a minute, you know, that ruins any perfection. But it was pretty darn good, I thought, for most of the way. And, a lot of good interviews. And, as far as... They made WrestleMania seem like a real, real big deal. That was the one thing that I felt like watching the show, and they did enough to build to it. And the Miz thing with Cena at the end, I agree. It felt like it was taking forever, but on the flip side, I get it. I mean, they really, everyone realizes where Miz stands in this three-way deal with Rock and Cena, and they really want to make him come as close to being an equal because they don't want him
really?
To be the odd man. You know, the forgotten man, so they're really, every single week he lays out Cena.
Yeah, every single week he lays out Cena, but earlier on in the show, he wrestled the great Kali. It went a minute. Kali was beating the hell out of him, and Alex Riley made the save. So I just don't understand, are they really that concerned about Miz, that was their idea of what would be a great segment?
Well, I think that they thought that the idea that he was beating a giant down with like 50 million chair shots was the,
after his life was saved.
Yeah, I know. I saw what they did. I mean, my thought when watching, because when they first do the run-in, I'm going like, that's really stupid. But I think that their feeling is that the last thing people see is this giant great Kali getting beaten down with 15 chair shots and all that. And I actually, DDT on a chair and everything and just like left, bleeding in the back, although that wasn't planned. But, I think in their mind, and I don't disagree, the final scene of him having laid the guy out kind of overcomes the fact that there's that momentary point that was kind of stupid in there. It probably would have been better had they booked anyone else, but I guess they had some theme of first time ever matches, and I guess he's probably, they wrestled in the Royal Rumble a couple of years ago. By themselves, but I don't recall them ever having a singles match on television, so it's probably not. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they may have, but I just don't remember it.
To me, if you really want to make Miz an equal to John Cena, then just make him an equal to John Cena.
Well, he's laid him out every single week.
Yeah, but he's not an equal. He's a guy that runs in afterwards and hits him with a chair from behind or
that's
whatever.
The heel.
I realize that, but so is Alberto Del Rio. He hasn't lost a match since November.
Yeah, well.
And people see him as being at the level of Edge.
Yeah, but you know what? I think they see Miz above Alberto Del Rio and Edge.
Oh.
So I don't know if that's necessarily the problem.
I don't know about that.
I think so. Even though when Edge and Miz wrestled, they kind of Edge won the one match, and I think he won. I don't remember exactly what the other one was, but he kind of like I think he speared, and there was a DQ in the other one, but. I don't know. When I talk to people of late, as far as like the big stars, people mention Miz's name now, and they don't mention Edge's name now. And I think a lot of that's due to the fact that SmackDown's kind of a B show. And I don't know that Del Rio's cool and everything, but I don't see him being as over as Miz.
Let's look at this show. Rock was in his office, supposedly on the phone with the president. President Obama, not the president of WWE. And they did a skit.
Are you sure that's who he was on the phone with?
I believe so. He said Mr. President.
Yeah. Okay.
And Jack Tunney has passed on.
Maybe it was Dana.
Doubtful.
Okay.
Suppose it's possible.
Well, he is president.
He is president, that's true.
Yeah.
Maybe he was talking to Scott Coker. Who knows? Isn't he the president of Strikeforce?
I don't know if he still is.
Anyway, he did a long skit here where he called a young boy into his office playing the role of John Cena, and the kid essentially acted like a child. The storyline here is that Rock is trying to have a grown-up conversation with Cena, and Cena always responds like a child. So he had a child come in, and he cut a promo on this child. He made the child cry. Told the child that he sucked, whole nine yards. Didn't matter how the child felt.
The child was better than everyone else, almost everyone else on the whole show.
And he was pretty good.
Yeah.
He was pretty good. So, gave the little fella a Cena shirt to blow his nose on, and gave him a gift of Fruity Pebbles, and I thought the stuff with the kid was great. And
oh, yeah.
Then Rock had to cut a promo on The Miz, and I'm sure it was a fine promo, but all I could hear was the stupid music in the background.
Oh, that music. That was like when TNA did that. That was such a bad idea.
I thought the promo
was excellent, but the music, absolutely terrible idea.
I wonder if they told Rock that they were going to put this music in there, because if they didn't, he needs to lay the smack down on whoever's idea that was.
Remember they were doing that with Matt Hardy when Matt Hardy turned on Jeff? They were doing that a couple of,
not
you know,
only
whatever
that,
it was.
They did some of those in WWE, too, like on SmackDown when Kane's...
No, that's what I mean. On SmackDown with Matt Hardy. And,
oh, yeah.
And they did it a lot in TNA, and it always sucked in TNA.
It never...
You're right. You know, I think they did with Matt... Was it Matt Hardy and Kane? But I remember Matt Hardy doing promos, you know, when he turned on Jeff with that music, and it just... It never works. It turns it into some sappy garbage, and boy, was that a bad idea, you know, in this situation.
So, hit and miss this segment right here. Big hit with the kid, big miss with the stupid music.
Yeah.
Had Trish meeting with Snooki backstage. They're pals now. There's a duo I never thought I would see. Michael Cole was in a box apparently made of like bulletproof glass or something like that.
One of those pods from the Elimination Chamber deal.
Something like that. The idea was, and actually I liked the idea for about 10 minutes till they just ruined it.
When he just walked out of it?
Yeah, when he just got out of it and walked right by Jerry Lawler. So,
yeah.
Good idea, bad execution, but he's in this big glass case and...
I thought it was pretty funny, actually.
It was funny until he got out of it.
Yeah.
So, Miz cut a promo. And this was not the Chris Jericho promo he has been doing of late. This was he ratcheted up the annoying in this promo and basically cut a promo on The Rock, saying if he stepped in the ring with him, he would make him cry, make him scream like a little girl, talked about how he'd beaten up Cena the last 3 weeks in a row, and GM eventually dinged, and Cole, as noted, just got out of the box and walked right by Lawler, which, of course, begs the question, why was there a box? So Lawler...
It was funny.
It was funny. It would have been actually good if he would never got out of the box.
Yeah.
So Lawler read the GM...
And taunted people from inside, and they couldn't get him.
Yeah, that's the idea. So,
yeah. And actually, he should have been doing those things. He should have had that like little stand inside his box so he could have read it and get the heat.
Yeah, see, he wasn't thinking. I was actually looking at it when he first started ranting. I noticed there was no lid on the box, and I'm thinking, why didn't he put a lid on this box? Because if Lawler really wanted to get to him, he'd just climb over the thing and get into the box. And that's right when he opened the door and just walked out of it. So they trumped me, in fact. So anyway, he
I want to interrupt on one thing on the Miz promo, because it really hit me during this promo that, you know, everyone, the one thing that everyone talks about with the Miz is that. That no matter what he does and what he says, they don't believe he's a tough guy. And even in this day and age, it doesn't matter a lot, but it matters a lot, if you know what I'm saying. Because when I watched him do this promo where he's threatening The Rock, there was like, you know, like one of the things that makes this kind of promo work, it's like, first of all, the guy doing it has to do a good, you know, be a good promo guy doing it. And he is. But he also has to be, in some form or fashion, believable enough to where you believe that, you know, he just might beat the hell out of The Rock. And it's funny because The Rock's an actor who hasn't been wrestling for years and years, and he's doing this promo, and my reaction to it is, you know, this is a really good promo, but it's really doing nothing for me because in no way, shape, or form do I buy that this guy, if he was in a fight with The Rock, would have a prayer. He's a freaking TV reality star, and the other guy... If nothing else was a, you know what I mean?
If nothing else, he's a Samoan.
And it's not the size thing, because he's not a small guy, but he's just, I think it might be the pretty boy thing, or just the fact that, you know, again, you know, the one thing that everyone talks about is that they know him, and they know he's not really tough. And as silly as that is, you know, I mean, there is something that no matter how much they push him, I mean, the ratings might lie in 1 week, but the ratings don't lie in 5 weeks, and that's, you know, no matter how much they push him, you know, I mean, it's that, you know, that's a deal there. And the other one is that, you know, I mean, people, you know, that's why they got to shove him down and have him beat down John Cena week after week after week after week, because the normal doing it every other week, it just isn't enough because of that one, you know, flaw that he does have.
Okay. So, well, first off, Lance Knight's spent about 20 minutes bringing up that very point on Thursday's show. And part of the whole deal is, okay, yes, he's a reality star and everything like that, and people don't believe he's tough, and like you, I watched this promo, and not for a single second did I believe that he would beat Rock's ass in a fair fight, or anything even remotely appropriate.
Even in a fake fight.
Well, that's the point. But you know, it's like, okay, so if that's the case, then you've got to try even harder to try to push him to the level of your top guys.
Okay, so you're saying basically the Kali idea was a real bad idea, which I do agree with you on.
It was a horrible idea. I mean, even in the fake world of pro wrestling, a guy that can barely move.
They should not have done that finish. I agree with you there. I know why they do it. But the chair shot beatdown was not a bad idea. I think that was very violent and very good. But, you know, but you're right. He shouldn't have taken that collie. And no way, shape, or form should he have taken that collie chop, and should Alex Riley have needed to save him from that squeeze.
But
he should not have been in that squeeze position at all.
Every chair beatdown, every post-match beatdown of John Cena, every single one begins with somebody else doing the damage, or him attacking them from behind with an object, which, yes, I realize that that's what heels do. But when you're a heel that nobody takes seriously as a tough guy at all, that's not going to work.
Yeah, because, you know, like, with the heels that made that situation work, that I recall, for the most part, as far as main event money-drawing heels, were guys that the people thought were kind of tough. And part of the deal of why they would get heat with all those that help is that, like, God, you know, you're a tough guy, but you need help. You know what I mean? As opposed to you're a pussy and need help, which is like your second, third match heel heat, if you know what I mean.
Or there's even heat to the guy who
doesn't have main event credibility heat.
Or there's even heat to the guy that people know he is tough, but he still cheats because he's lazy. He doesn't use his skills.
Yeah, no, that was the point I was making. Exactly.
Sure, exactly.
That's the heat. The heat is that he's a tough guy, but he's taking shortcuts.
Yes.
You know, instead of going in a fair fight. But, you know, I mean, it's like he's a threat in a fair fight, but maybe he would lose the fair fight one-on-one, and he's cheating, as opposed to, you know, he needs it because he couldn't even hang one-on-one.
And that's the problem the Miz has right now.
Well, you know, the Kali match, you know, the other problem is that Jesus Christ, Kali can't sell to save his life.
No, Kali is this was the worst guy in the world to do this with.
Yeah,
well, that match was next.
It was over
in
a minute, so it wasn't that bad.
For those who didn't see it, Kali came out, and for like a full minute, all he did was just beat up Miz. And Miz is about to be finished with the squeeze hold, and Alex Riley, who was supposedly fired 2 weeks ago, he's already back. He attacked Kali, and then when Kali was down, Miz came in with a chair, beat the crap out of him. Punctured his back with something, and Cully's bleeding
chair,
all over the place.
The chair broke because he threw so many chair shots that a part of the chair broke, and maybe one of the parts that broke, like, sliced his back.
Yeah. So, that was that, and, you know.
And he did a DDT on the chair, too, leaving him, you know, at the end.
Sure.
But, you know, the thing, I don't know, well, I guess it doesn't really matter, but it, you know what was really also very goofy about this? Is you've got Ranjan Singh out there, and he just, like, stands there.
Well, the man
it's like,
in a chair.
It's like he shouldn't have come out because, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I'm just thinking, like, he's supposed to be his brother, and he's supposed to be a babyface, and he just stands there.
Yeah.
But I guess that's, no one really thinks of that, but I just thought, you know, when I'm watching him, that, like, what is he doing here? This is stupid. He's just standing there.
We had Snooki hanging out with Morrison backstage, and Vicky and Dolph walked up, and Vicky and Snooki, bad acting central.
Oh, boy.
Gist of it was that,
I'm trying to think how many takes they had to do to get that one, and that one wasn't very good.
I was going
to
say, based on what they showed, they did one take.
Yeah, usually when those things are really bad, it's usually about the 39th take.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how many this was, but I have, you know, things like the, you know, similar to that I've seen on Raw. You know, it's like, oh, you know, and I go, how did this get on the air? It's like, oh, it's like the 20th take, and they just got tired of doing them.
So the line was that Vicky is upset that Snooki took her spot on the Rolling Stone cover.
Yeah, that was a stretch.
She claimed she had been offered the Playboy cover, and Snooki
said...
That
was a stretch, too.
Snooki said, clearly you were offered the centerfold because there's no way you'd fit on just one page. And Vicky went to slap her, but Snooki beat her to the punch, and boy, did she slap the shit out of her. And Vicky pitched a fit, and that was that. Daniel Bryan and Sheamus for the U.S. title. Ring announcer made sure to remind us that Sheamus had promised to quit if he did not win the title. He did, in fact, win the title. They had a pretty damn good match, actually.
I thought this match was really good.
Well, Daniel Bryan
had a spray on tan.
He's very dark. You're also looking at him next to Sheamus.
No, but he had a spray on tan because I could see, the runs in the spray.
Sure.
As opposed to, a real tan.
Well, good for him. He can't tan.
I'll go whatever it is. I'm sure someone got on his case for being white, and he didn't look so white tonight.
No, he didn't. So he had a hell of a match with the guy and came off the top, got broke, kicked to death. Sheamus got the pin and the title, and there you go. Good stuff.
They said the King of the Ring curse is now over.
What a way
whatever
to promote the
means.
King of the Ring, by the way, to talk about how the winner is always cursed to lose.
I didn't even know there was such a curse. And they've been doing King of the Ring for, the 80s? Well, nationally since the 90s.
Yeah.
And I was not aware of this curse.
Well, it's the wrestling business, so I'm sure you could find evidence that every single winner has been cursed in some way.
I guess. We look up all those guys. I mean, Mabel was cursed before he ever won it.
That's true. We were cursed when he did win it.
What a horrible show that was.
After
that show was almost as bad as last night's show.
No, it wasn't. Nothing was.
Oh, yes, it was. That King of the Ring with that Mabel one, it was pretty damn awful.
Someday that's going to be on 24/7. I'll go back and watch it, and I'll determine if it was, in fact, worse than
last night's.
No, the
finishes weren't worse, but the wrestling
disaster.
The quality of the wrestling was worse.
Well, I don't know. Mr. Anderson set some standards last night, as did the women.
Yeah, it's true.
We had Cole in the ring, and he guaranteed Austin would have a minimal effect on WrestleMania, and he said he knew how defensive Jerry got when people talked about his family, whether living or dead, he said. But he was not going to talk about any of his family members. He was going to have his family members come out and talk to him. And out came Brian Christopher doing his too cool dance. And he did the dance to the point that he blew himself up. And then he had to speak on the mic, so he was gasping for air. And
he sucked. He looked older than Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
He looked like frickin' Dust. I thought it was frickin' Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The bleached white hair did him no favors. I will
say
that.
My. He looked. I mean, because I haven't seen him in years. He's aged so much.
Yeah, the road alone.
Yeah, it's more than the road on his case.
That's true.
Yeah.
So he explained that growing up, he never felt like he'd had a father because Jerry was always traveling the world playing the king, and he neglected his son. Jerry never wanted a child, never wanted anybody to steal his spotlight, never even acknowledged him as his child when Brian finally made it to WWE, and then Lawler told him that he wasn't the only one happy that he didn't use the Lawler name, said his son was a bigger screw-up than Charlie Sheen. I don't know if I'd go that far.
He's pretty close.
Maybe. And said just the fact you associate yourself with a jackass like Michael Cole tells everyone the kind of person you are, and... So anyway, Christopher said that he was ashamed of his father and ended up with good old Jim Ross coming out. And
after Christopher left.
That's right. Christopher left, kind of slapped his father around, but Jerry didn't get in the ring. Jerry was awesome here, just not saying anything.
Yeah.
And Jim Ross got in the ring, and Cole said that he was wondering when this moment was going to occur, was ranting about being the voice of WWE, not Jim Ross. Ross said the true voice of the WWE was actually the fans, and he said that Cole was he was saying that Lawler was like a kangaroo that had carried Cole around in his pouch.
Cole had been carried for all these years as an announcer.
Yes, the kangaroo line was important because he mentioned that Cole was reminding him of another type of animal, and the fans thought he was going to say jackass, but Ross instead called him a rat bastard. And so Cole got all pissed off and made light of Lawler, and Ross, and Ross got back in the ring and took his jacket off, and Ross and Cole are about to have this brawl, and out comes Jack Swagger. He attacks Lawler. He gets in the ring. He boots Jim Ross. He puts him in the ankle lock. Cole is, you know, cheerleading him on. We have Lawler hit the ring, and Cole jumped on his back, and so Swagger put him in the ankle lock as well. And then Swagger had Cole put Ross in the ankle lock, and they left both guys laying. This was like a great old-school heat angle. Laying out
Jim,
these...
Jim Ross did such a good job of selling, too.
They both did. Well,
yeah,
Lawler.
Yeah, well, Lawler's a pro. Obviously. But, I mean, Jim Ross is not a physical performer, but he was, like... Selling was some of the best on the show.
All four of these men in their role were outstanding.
Michael Cole was great, absolutely.
God damn, he was great.
Swagger was real good, but Swagger got way too excited. That was not good.
In what way? Killing poor Jim Ross?
Jim Ross was hurting real bad. He was his knee torn out.
You know, I did hear him scream his knee at some point.
Yeah, well, that was you know, there were selling, and then there was real. He got way too excited.
Oh, is Ross all right?
I think he's okay, but his knee was almost. He thought he got his knee torn out.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you go back and listen, I know that at some point when he was doing it, Ross yelled something about his knee. So there you go. That sucks. But it was a great angle. I guess if you're going to get your knee torn out, at least have it torn out in a great angle and not like a women's match on an Impact pay-per-view or a TNA pay-per-view.
I guess if you're going to look at it that way.
That's the way I always looked at it.
Yeah.
If you're going to get hurt, have it be in a good match at least. Randy Orton and Mason Ryan.
Oh, there was another one.
Yeah. I love how they showed Orton's family in the front row and it was a different wife since they used a fake one last time. I was like, that's not the same lady there. So Orton, thing about this match is, like, Mason is supposed to be this big giant, but Orton is deceptively tall. So Mason looked much shorter than he ever has. And he was all right, I guess.
You're giving him more credit. I thought that he, for a big muscular guy, has absolutely no aggression. I mean, he's just not ready, I mean, which we already knew anyway.
That's obvious.
But, I mean, he was more not ready than even I thought. I mean, he had no aggression. He didn't know how to work as a big guy. He didn't know how to sell. So if you can't work on offense, you can't work on defense, it's pretty hard to have a match. And that's with a guy like Orton, who's, you know, usually pretty decent at carrying people. You know, just it wasn't that horrible in the sense that it was short, but Mason Ryan looked he should not be on the roster. I mean, that's the reality. I mean, it was very clear in this match. He's just, I mean,
well. Punted back.
Yeah, I know. He got punted. So maybe we won't be seeing him for a while. Boy, that was a great end to Nexus.
That was quite the run the new Nexus had right there.
Yeah, building up that great feud with the core.
Maybe they'll have another NXT with all these Nexus guys back.
Yeah.
They announced Drew Carey going to the Hall of Fame. He got a video and poor Bullet Bob didn't, so tells you about their priorities there.
Yeah.
Cole was ranting and raving about how he was going to use the ankle lock to defeat Lawler at WrestleMania. And then he started ranting about Jim Ross, telling him his ankle lock was a slobber knocker, and told him never to mess with him again. And Cole's great when he's not doing commentary.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing, the deal with, because a lot of people were going like, okay, so who's going to, so is Ross going to announce at Mania? And I actually was told tonight by one person that, in fact, Ross would be announcing at Mania. And then another person's, and the thing is, it was 2 weeks or 3 weeks before Mania last year, I remember being told that Ross was going to be announcing at Mania of the Bret Hart match, I think, and the Undertaker-Shawn match. And in fact, that did not happen.
Actually, in hindsight, thank God he did not commentate that Bret Hart-Vince McMahon match.
Yeah, but Undertaker and Shawn, he would have made,
that would have been awesome.
It, you know, one of the great matches of all time.
That would have been great, but the Bret match, I don't think that one needed Jim Ross.
Couldn't have been, well, that one was hopeless.
That was a match where Jim Ross may have been a little too honest for his own good.
I don't know. I don't think he would ever, Vince is in the match, so I don't think he's going to use the bowling shoe analogy in that one.
I know, but he'd kill his credibility if he did anything else.
Yeah. Well, he might have to when it's Vince, and also it's Brett, who, in theory, it was Brett's last match, even though, in fact, it wasn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was told that, in fact, these plans have not been made yet, so who knows? You know, it's going to be one of those things that will decide in the last week or two, but the fact that he was on TV makes me think that it's, you know, like, I'm watching it just as, you know, the way I kind of like read Vince, and it's like, to me, it's like a lock that he's going to announce, because if it wasn't, they wouldn't have brought him back. But supposedly, it's not decided yet.
Well, I expect him to be there.
Well, he's going to be there. He's signing autographs. I mean, we know he's there.
No, that's good.
I mean, he was there last year.
I mean, I expect him to be on the show in some capacity.
I mean, he was supposed to be last year, too.
Yeah, but he was not involved in angles leading up to the show.
No, that's right. Absolutely. That's why I think that he will be.
I also expect the Miz girl to be involved in Miz's match.
I mean, if they can fit her in a logical way, why not?
Zack Attack tried to hit on Snooki, and she liked what she saw, which led to nothing. So she came out and did a little promo, said she couldn't wait to see Trish shut Vicky's big fat mouth up. And we had Vicky versus Trish Stratus, who thankfully was wearing gear this time around. And Vicky cut a promo on Snooki, showed a Rolling Stone cover that first she showed the real one with Snooki, then showed a mock-up with herself, which to me, quite frankly, were about identical. And they had a match. Trish didn't really do anything. Neither of them did anything. It was not even really a match. It involved a lot of, you know, Vicky's shoe.
Bad slapstick.
Yeah, Vicky's shoe fell off. She threw one at Trish. Trish got the second one, started spanking her. Ziggler ran down to break it up. Morrison followed, took him out with a tornado dive. Lay Cool was in next. Trish ran in wild on them until Layla grabbed her foot and Michelle super kicked her. And then Vicky climbed on top and got the pin. So
she's not fired, so she's going to be on Raw again.
She's back on Raw again. So anyway, Michelle started bullying Snooki. So Snooki yanked her off the apron, gave Layla a Thez press. That's right. Snooki did a Thez press.
Yeah.
And Trish ran in, took out Michelle. We had a WrestleMania 6 person in the making. Dolph Lay Cool against Morrison, Trish, and Snooki.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That'll headline any WrestleMania.
Well, it is what it is. You know, it's
a match.
It's to get entertainment gossip stuff. I mean, when they announced the match, you know, you could tell the crowd could have cared less. But you know, it's just to get gossiping. At least they didn't boo it. And you know, they when she first came out, they did boo her. Yeah. So when at the end, it was like they were okay, whatever. It wasn't like it wasn't a negative reaction, but it wasn't much of a reaction when they announced that match.
This week we had Shawn Michaels talking about The Undertaker and what the streak meant and how whenever the streak was on the line, Undertaker had all these superpowers or something like that. I don't know. It's pretty good. It's basically talking about how intimidating it was to be in the ring with him and that sort of thing. And Shawn's always good in these, so it was fine. Alberto Del Rio and John Cena, they brought out Brodus Clay again. And this is really what we needed for Alberto Del Rio, was a guy to run in his matches. They had a match. Cena set him up for the FU. Brodus ran in for the DQ. That sucked. Did nobody any favors. And then Rock's music hit. Cole had been promising Rock would be on the show. It was Miz with a skull cap on, which went over the heads of much of the crowd for way too long. You had women screaming at
The
Rock.
I know, wasn't that amazing?
Long after it was obvious it was
not
The Rock.
Yeah, like when it was like, Jesus, it's so clearly not him.
Well, Miz probably spent years in front of the mirror doing his Rock impressions, so...
Well, he did do the Rock walk okay.
I guess. He
Actually good.
He did pretty good. He reminded me a little of D'Lo Brown, to be quite honest with you. Too much of the head swagger. But anyway, he came out and the heels beat up John Cena, and then everybody disappeared except Miz, and it's one of those deals where, like, as I'm recapping and I'm writing, Miz finally gives him a suplex on the ramp. Oh, wait, no. Miz finally gives him the DDT. Oh, wait, no, there's more. So anyway, after this went 20 minutes past the top of the hour, as Miz slowly beat him all over the building and finally gave him the skull-crushing finale on the... there's a big WWE metal sign up there, and that was the end of the show. There you go.
Yeah. I like the show.
Yeah.
Even with the couple of flaws.
I thought a lot of the stuff was really good. I thought some of the stuff was very by-the-numbers pay-per-view build. And
I kind effective, of, though.
I expect
I'd rather
more.
Buy the numbers than what TNA did on, what TNA's been doing for their pay-per-view.
These comparisons to TNA are just not fair. It's not even... I don't even think they're promoting the same sort of... I can't even call it entertainment. One group is presenting something that at one point was pro wrestling, and the other group is putting on a terrible television show every week that sometimes involves wrestlers as guest stars. Let's look at these spoilers here. Jeff Hardy.
This is for Thursday's show.
Jeff Hardy is...
He's home.
He's home. And they the way they did the deal, I guess left it open for him returning or not returning. It kind of sort of felt like they were writing him off.
If that thing is legit, and I mean I mean everyone that I have heard from that was backstage said that he was so completely messed up, like unbelievably messed up, right? But the problem with that is like if that's the case, what the hell? Why was he out there?
Yeah,
I mean, I was told it was, you know, like really obvious. It wasn't like, you know, toned down or something. It's like, so why was he out there? I mean, why didn't they just do a new? I mean, this whole thing. I mean, no matter what, you know, no matter how you slice it, there's more people at fault here than Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy may not even be at fault, but he probably is. But unless he's a great actor, and he's probably not that. But no matter what, TNA is at fault. Like, big time on this one.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
2 months ago, this same thing happened, and they explained that he was just tired.
Okay, but on that one, they rebooked the show. I mean, how come they didn't rebook the show then?
I don't know. Isn't that the point of a creative team, to come up with a creative change to something like this?
Yes. Maybe this was their creative change.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, time to fire some people.
I'd say so.
It's 5 seconds. Every person listening to this right now could have come up with a better idea in literally 5 seconds.
It wouldn't have been hard. Well, I think that, you know, it could have been that they just sat there and just said, you know what, we'll get all these, everyone's going to be talking, we'll get people talking about it, and that's good, and it'll build up the rating for Thursday.
Sure, let's enable the guy.
Well, that's another issue, but I don't know. I mean, we probably won't be seeing Hardy for a while. But, you know, I don't know how they can use Hardy again.
Dave,
if this is legit. I mean, how can you?
It's TNA.
I know they will. I mean, it's cause the same thing that happened last time they had Hardy.
Yeah.
But this is ridiculous. You know, it's like, how many, you know, it's just ridiculous.
Yep.
But then again, they brought back Scott Hall. They may bring him back again, too.
Yeah.
Once he goes through rehab, who knows?
Well, you know, they don't like to see anybody out of a job.
Yeah, but don't rely on them.
It's a big, happy family.
I guess so.
No one have to let people go.
Well, they let Sanjay Dutt go. He didn't do nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And Daphne, they let her go.
Huh?
I don't even know why. Although they just stopped using her.
Show opened with Sting in the ring. Had the lame purple championship belt and the belt, which, I don't know. Is this just Eric Young's belt?
I thought they made a new belt. So Eric Young, whatever did happen at that angle with Eric Young holding the belt?
I'll bet they just use Eric Young's belt, because I can't even fathom that with all the cost cutting, they just keep making new belts.
I can.
Well, you're right. Anyway, he said Hogan and Eric were responsible for what had happened with Jeff. How could you take Jeff Hardy and turn him black, he said. And he gave Hogan Jeff's belt, and Hogan tossed it out of the ring. And, you know, Hogan said that Hardy couldn't stand in Hogan's shadow. He said the wrestlers from all over the world wanted to join his tsunami that was taking over wrestling. I will withhold judgment until I see if that actually airs on television and he actually said those words, because there's still part of me that...
Well, he definitely used the word tsunami. I can tell you that as a fact.
He did?
Oh, he absolutely used it, because I've seen, you know, several different reports, and it was in every single report. It wasn't just the one that I saw.
I absolutely
had to have used that word.
After all of these years, I still give these people the benefit of the doubt, to my dismay.
Yeah, it was not the best choice of words by any means, but that wasn't the only, you know, good choice of words.
So Sting said all of these people wanted in, and anyway, Bully Ray came out, and I guess he wants to be with Hogan or something like that. And
well, he's Bully Ray's taken Jeff's spot that Jeff was scripted for on this show.
I see. So we had him.
This was, you know, getting him into that mix.
We had him. We had Styles. We had Anderson. They all want a shot. Is Anderson a heel now? Can you at least answer that question for me? Does anyone know?
No, I don't know.
Because I read these spoilers, and this man cannot possibly be a babyface.
Yeah, but he's confronting Hogan, and he's not friends with him, so he is what he is.
So he's going to come out there as a babyface, and he's going to cry that it's his turn, and he's going to cry that these other people are getting a shot as well?
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, also, Styles...
Hey, you know, hey, think about TNA's book Babyface for the last 5 years.
I know. Again, I don't know why. Styles, Anderson, RVD, and Bully Ray are going to have a four-way, and the winner gets a shot at Sting. We had Steiner and Crimson beating Ink Inc. So much for Ink Inc's push. We had, and by the way, what sense does that make since they seemed to build up a rematch on the pay-per-view last night?
No sense.
Okay. We had Pope doing a gimmick where, I guess what happened was, he had a guy in a wheelchair in the ring. He had another guy, I forget what his
I think he had a blind person they made
a
see
blind
or something.
Person, yeah. And then he had a large woman. And he used his magical powers to get the handicapped person to stand up out of their wheelchair. And he caused the blind man to see. And then he said, I can't do anything for this fat woman. And that segued into talking about how fat Samoa Joe and his family was. And apparently, live, people said this was horrific.
Oh, that's what I heard, too.
We had Madison Rayne beating Alyssa Flash, who was back for the day, as one of the girls they bring back and beat. And Mickie James made the save. She wants a title shot. And Rayne said, you've already had it. The only way you can get it is at Lockdown if you put your hair on the line. So Mickie agreed to do that. A hair versus hair match in a steel cage.
No. So just hair versus title.
Oh, hair versus title. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Madison's not getting her head shaved yet. Maybe she will down the line. I hope not, though.
It was funny on Impact a couple of weeks ago. They did an angle with Madison Rayne and Mickie James, and I thought, God damn, that was awesome. They actually did a great angle building up this Victory Road pay-per-view. Then I looked at the lineup, and it wasn't on the pay-per-view. Jeff and Karen came out.
Victory Road was the forget up, you know, like, you know,
I know.
Like,
yeah.
It was the one that you, you know, it's like Kurt and Jeff, you know, like did all that stuff. But that's for everything is for the next one. Like, nothing was for this last one.
So they came out, Jeff and Karen, and Kurt wanted his truce. And what happened was Kurt had a gift, and Jeff opened it, and it was a guitar. And he was all happy, and Kurt, Karen, and Jeff all made up. But then Kurt grabbed the guitar and hit Jarrett with it and apparently busted him open bad, bleeding everywhere. Karen went to give Kurt a low blow. Kurt revealed he was wearing a cup. And then he announced that he wanted Jeff at Lockdown. Jeff is all covered with blood, having been sneak attacked by this madman. And he says no. And so Kurt says, well then, I will kill you both.
Yeah, probably not the best choice of words.
Yeah. I'm going to kill you both, he said.
Yeah.
We had Gunner and Murphy and Rob Terry for the television championship.
For the prestigious television championship.
Gunner is the champion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt Morgan and Angelina and Winter beat Hernandez, Sarita, and Rosa in a street fight when Winter pinned Rosita. And then we had Bully Ray, RVD, Styles, and Anderson, ending with Anderson and Van Damme doing a double pin. Ray attacked everybody. Flair gave Styles a low blow. Ray used a Bubba Bomb on Styles off the stage of the table. So presumably we're getting Rob Van Dam versus Anderson versus Sting and Styles versus Bubba Ray at Lockdown.
Yeah. No. Well, unless because it was supposed to, the Lockdown is, you know, it could have been changed, but Lockdown was supposed to be the D-Von Bubba blow off.
Well, I mean, if they've put Bubba in the Jeff Hardy spot, then he would get the shot against.
Yeah, I know. So that may have changed the match. That's right.
Poor D-Von. He's the one that gets left out in the cold.
Yeah.
So that's Impact, everybody. And Dave, let's talk a little bit about the conference call today.
Well, I mean, you know, they've already made changes from Friday, and in fact, if they there will be interpromotional matches between Strikeforce and UFC, and it basically, if there's a match the fans want to see, they're going to deliver it. So what they said on Friday, they have in fact changed the tune. They changed their mind on that already, and there was not really a lot else of note, you know, just talking about, this is really weird, okay? They need more fighters because they want to be running more shows. And if they are going to be running more shows, they do need new fighter, more fighters. So they have a roster now of 400 fighters. So, and they have probably, you know, I'd have to do the math on how many they can service, but I pretty much can guarantee it's, with the schedule they have right now, it's well under 400.
How many fighters were under contract to Strikeforce?
140.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Including women, yeah.
Because I would always watch those Strikeforce shows, and it always seemed like there's five people in each division.
Yeah, they I remember when they first, you know, bought Pro Elite, and I actually got like a roster because we were kind of going through it and like, you know, who was there and everything. There's a lot of people if you actually like, you know, there's a lot of people under contract that don't get used that were very unhappy, and that's still going to be the case somehow. So,
well, hopefully they yeah, can.
Elbows on the ground are official, so yep. That's you know. They're going to use a six-side cage instead of an eight-side cage for Strikeforce.
That I would not do.
Yeah, well, that's what they're doing. And they're meeting with Showtime this week when they're in New York. And just, you know, a lot of stuff. But they're very much aware of the championship issue as far as, you know, not watering down titles. Exactly what they're going to do, whether they're the unification matches or what, I don't know, but that was clearly when I brought it up, and they were clearly already on that page, you know, and just go, you know, yeah, we're going to have to make some matches. And, you know, I don't think they want 14 champions out there.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, they talked about, and this is a risky one. You know, they talked about the idea of running like, you know, 8, 10, 12 shows a year in Australia, 8, 10, 12 shows a year in England. I don't know. You know, just, you know, running that often. I mean, their feeling is they want a constant presence in the markets, you know, where there's always a show coming up in the market as opposed to just going in once a year and then getting a lot of publicity during that month and then, you know, kind of like having it kind of like not fade out, but, you know, just kind of like not have a presence there for a lot of months. So, you know, again, time will tell. Just historically, when they go to a market over and over and over again, it becomes tougher and tougher. And, you know, I just know with WWE, you know, I mean, you know, what they're talking about, the plan that they're espousing, you know, as far as, you know, running, you know, opening offices in these different countries and running, you know, basically having a circuit in their country and maybe like one or two big shows a year, but a lot of smaller shows in all these different parts is very, very similar to what, I don't know, was about 3-4 years ago when WWE had that same plan, which, you know, in fact, about 2 months after they came up with that plan, they dropped because of the fear of burning out markets and watering down the brand. And, you know, again, maybe, you know, maybe these guys will pull it off. I mean, it's just a lie, you know. They're risk takers. I give them that. You know, I mean, they've got a formula that makes money, and they're going to, you know, I mean, we're going to see what the market can bear. A lot of markets. You know, I mean, again, they're, you know, I can see that a lot of these shows that they're going to do, if they really do this many shows, they're probably going to stream them and stuff because they won't be able to get them on television. And then, I mean, I don't know. I guess if they're minor shows, it's not that big of a deal that people don't see, you know, you can see them. It's just like, I don't know, it makes it more difficult and more time-consuming to follow. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. It's a runaway train in some ways, and they're trying to figure out what to do with the train now.
So some of the questions here. This person says, is there a chance Rock will sell heavily for Cena at WrestleMania? When he was active, he did more jobs than any star at his level except for maybe Flair. Does Rock still have that same mentality about putting people over? Could all these great Rock promos just make Cena that much stronger if Rock puts him over convincingly at Mania? It seems that has to happen. Otherwise, Rock will do long-term damage to WWE's top active ticket seller. That was a first-class burial in the opening segment tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Every one of them has been, though.
This one in particular was like a, wow.
Yeah. And
he ate his lunch.
He didn't get a comeback. And Cena's, you know, big comeback last week was
really
weak.
Thank God he didn't get a comeback. That's the last thing Cena needs nowadays.
Yeah. Well, he got booed, you know, he was getting booed tonight. Yeah. You know, and so, yeah, I mean, Rock's going to do what he thinks is the right thing for business. You know, he's not, you know, him selling ain't going to hurt his feelings. So it's just a question of where they're going and what they want to do. But if it calls for him to sell based on where they're going next, he will. And if it doesn't, then he probably won't. Or he still might, actually. But no, he's not afraid of selling, that's for sure.
This person says, I'm wondering if you or Dave knew whether or not Shane McMahon showed any interest in buying Strikeforce when it emerged that it could be sold for the right price.
His name never popped up whatsoever. I mean, I've heard talked to a lot of different people. And I'm actually surprised in a way. But, there were a lot of different entities, but Shane McMahon's never surfaced.
And also, why the hell aren't they showing vignettes of Michael Cole training amateur wrestling with Jack Swagger, wearing a singlet and looking all goofy, a bit like they did with Vince when he was training for his match with Stone Cold around 1999?
Yeah, they actually should. I think they could have some really, really funny skits. But, you know, they have so much TV time, and they, you know, they have to get the women in and stuff like that.
This person is wondering whether anyone's discussing antitrust issues involved in the Strikeforce.
Goddamn, today it was on that press call, people were bringing that up. I mean, that was the one thing that they were really, you know, that was just very interesting listening to Lorenzo and Dana. You know, was
they were just like they said, raise some money and start your deal, go for it.
Right, that's right. That there's thousands of promoters out there, and there's no barrier to entry. I mean, you can just raise your money and whatever. The only problem is that every freaking fighter, and you know, now that this thing is, now that they've got both these companies, and I mean, more power to them, as a fan of the sport, it's probably really good, you know, that almost, you know, with the exception of Eddie Alvarez and Hatsu Hioki, who will probably end up in UFC, and Bibiano Fernandez will probably end up in UFC anyway. So really, I guess, except for Eddie Alvarez and Joe Warren and Hector Lombard, you know, pretty much every, you know, top level fighter in every single weight class is under this banner right now. So, you can start up, but you know, you're not going to have any stars.
You got to make your stars.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
It's not easy. Has any wrestling program won or been nominated for an Emmy? Do you think Vince?
Hell no! Are you kidding?
Do you watch the show? No, seriously.
I don't know that any program deserves to come on for an Emmy.
Yeah. Let's see. What percentage of Strikeforce did Scott Coker actually own?
I don't know the number, but I think it was, you know, the number that I heard going around was 30%.
That sounds about right. 25, 30?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do one more here. My friends and I are having a debate whether WWE or UFC would have a higher percentage of guys on performance-enhancing drugs as of today in this current wellness policy era. Not historically, as I'm sure WWE had the higher percentage then. Or maybe not, I don't know. I'm not asking for any names or anything like that. Just which company would, in your opinion, have a higher percentage of guys on them?
I think they're probably about the same.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, I mean, it's pretty much from what I'm, you know, whenever, you know, what I'm, you know, not everyone in WWE, but pretty much everyone with money, or almost everyone with money, is probably doing GH. But, you know, in MMA, you know, I've had people tell me that everyone's on, but then other people, I think it's probably about 50%. And so I think maybe more in WWE, maybe slightly more, maybe about the same. But there are certain things, you know, because they're tested less frequently in UFC, and they know when the test is, they're probably doing, there's certain drugs that are almost surely being done in UFC that are not being done in WWE. But as far as guys doing some sort of performance enhancing drugs, you know, maybe more with WWE. Because the thing is like with UFC, you don't, you know, if there's the danger of getting beaten up. But there are a lot of good fighters that I don't believe are doing anything. But in WWE, it's like if you don't have that body, man, you're just kind of screwed. So, and there are people who can get that. You know, there are people who are, if they are very disciplined about eating and very gifted genetically, can get that body without performance-enhancing drugs. It's not impossible. But a lot of these guys can't. And I've seen some physical changes in some of the guys, you know, from like their indie days when they were younger. And, you know, that usually that's telling you something, because usually guys don't look better at, you know, close to 40 as they do when they're, you know, 23, 24. So, you know, it's prevalent in both.
And that's going to do it for today, everybody. We've got a lot of stuff coming up over the next couple of days, about a million different shows, and it is WrestleMania season, so we've got things coming up all the way up until WrestleMania and beyond. So check it out. We've got a new issue of the Figure Four out tomorrow, talking a lot about the UFC Strikeforce sale. Same thing with the Observer on Wednesday. So check out the front page. We'll talk to you again after a while.